Go ahead.
Good morning.
Speak up.
So I would like to present just highlights of the fight for a just new world economic order. And the first slide. In 1776, the year when the Americans declared their independence of Great Britain, Thomas Paine, who was there at the time, he said, "These are the times that try men's souls." And the thing is that time is not linear, but there are certain nodal points, certain inflection points, when time seems to be much more intense, that there are much more possibilities to create change in world history. This is one of the periods of time that we're faced with, and this is why we're saying that in 2 weeks, on the September 26th, it is crucial that some nations and some leaders stand up. Because what we will see is that history, there have been very challenging times, but there have also been very courageous individuals who have responded to those times and stood up. In 1776, the first sentence of the Declaration of Independence was, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And this was the dream of the American Revolution. The question now is to make that dream a reality for the whole world. This is the idea behind the drive for a new just world economic order. Next slide. World War II. There were tremendous battles between the Allies, between Roosevelt and Churchill, on the question of the fate of the colonies, the colonial empire after the war. Basically, Roosevelt said, these colonies must cease. They must be given their political freedom. They must be given the chance to have economic development. And we want to engage these countries in technology transfer. On the other hand, Winston Churchill said, "I am not in World War II to preside over the dissolution of the empire. Of course, the empires must remain." Unfortunately, President Roosevelt died just before the end of World War II, and his vision of a post-war anti-colonial time for the world was did not come to be. At the same time, Mr. LaRouche, who founded our magazine and our political campaign, he was actually stationed with the American Army in British India and Burma and saw the effects firsthand of the oppression of the colonial system. At that time, he was for the independence of India, and when he came back to the United States, one of the first things that he did politically was try to organize for a technology transfer, including nuclear power technology transfer from the United States to India. And he became committed from that time to have a policy of economic justice for the rest of the world. Then we skip to 1975. Just after, well, let's say that in the intervening period, in the middle of the 1960s, Mr. LaRouche founded our political organization with the purpose of having a leadership grouping of young intellectuals. He intervened in the anti-war student movement to organize around himself a group of idealistic young intellectuals who would be capable of having a positive economic program for the world in a period of economic depression and destruction of economies, which he foresaw unless the economic policy were changed. So there were a lot of other things that happened, but in 1975, this is, remember, 1973, 1974, this was a tremendous crisis in the world economy because of the oil prices, because of the war in the Middle East, and different manipulations, the prices of oil went up 400% or whatever, and the poorest countries were simply devastated. In 1975, LaRouche made a trip to both Iraq and to Israel, and on his way back in Germany, in Bonn, he held a press conference calling for debt relief and for the establishment of an international development bank which could issue low-interest, long-term credits for the purpose of economic development, also to the poorest countries. The next slide. This proposal, the International Development Bank, was circulated, and you know about the movement called the Non-Aligned Countries. At the, I think it was the fourth, wait, there was one, it was one like that. In 1975, after the pamphlet of this proposal for the International Development Bank was printed, there was a meeting of the Non-Aligned Nations in Peru, and the proposal was distributed, and one of the people who received that proposal was the foreign minister of Guyana, whose name was Frederick Wills. He went back to his hotel room, he read this proposal, and he was very moved. He said, this is a policy that I want to fight for. So then the next meeting of the Non-Aligned Nations was in 1976, and Mrs. Gandhi, who you saw on the last slide, came out with a proposal, also with the cooperation of Fred Wills and others who LaRouche's people were in touch with, for a proposal for a new just world economic order. And that the proposal at that meeting, which they came out with in their resolution, called for, one, the immediate cessation of the foreign debt payments of the poorest countries. Secondly, the establishment of a new universal monetary system which would replace the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, would stop what they call the anarchy of floating exchange rates. The third point was the creation of new credits which could fund worldwide economic development. And the fourth point was having triangular trade agreements between the so-called third world countries and the socialist bloc at that time and the Western industrial countries. and that these trade relations should be based on a fair trade policy, what we know now today is a fair trade policy, with decent prices for the products, should also include transfer of technology from the advanced industrial countries to the poorest countries. There should be mechanisms to secure raw materials for the nations, including oil, and a special vehicle for investment in food production. So they came out with that, and there was supposed to be a meeting, what was called a North-South meeting, to actually put these demands on the table for the before the industrialized country. That meeting was sabotaged. This was also the period where Henry Kissinger and allies were very active. And that meeting was sabotaged, but Fred Wills went to the United Nations General Assembly with the determination to put this on the agenda in any case. And we'll just see a quote from him. "The billions on this planet who live in the developing country and whose existence is subjugated to the constraints of the few who manipulate to their advantage the present-day economic system have pinned their hopes on the modest program put forward in Nairobi," that was another non-aligned meeting, "and elsewhere. Their determination is adamant, inexorable, and relentless. The IMF and the Bretton Woods monetary system must give way to alternative structures such as the international development banks, which are not geared to the revival and reconstruction of Europe, nor preferential arrangements for the developed market economies, but rather to the just distribution of the gains of an equitable global system." And note this phrase, the international development banks, which came directly from LaRouche's proposal. Unfortunately, there was a massive destabilization of the countries that were leading this campaign at that time in 76. Fred Wills himself had to flee to the United States from Guyana. Mrs. Gandhi was put out of power and later on assassinated. Ali Bhutto in Pakistan, there was a military coup against him, and then later on he was hung. So this, but the policy had been put on the table. The next inflection point is 1982. Mr. LaRouche said, because what had happened is that in the United States, under the Federal Reserve chairmanship of Paul Volcker, they decided to, under the idea of fighting inflation, they had an interest rate policy which went up to 20 or 22%. And this meant that poor countries who had borrowed money, all of a sudden their interest payments were reflecting then this massive interest rate hikes. And whereas they had borrowed a certain small amount of money, the interest payments became tremendous. And Mr. LaRouche used the metaphor, he called it a debt bomb, which later on was picked up by others. One of the countries that was most heavily hit by this was Mexico. At that time, López Portillo was the president of Mexico. And in May of 1982, Mr. LaRouche was invited to come to Mexico and have a personal meeting with López Portillo. At the end of the meeting, Portillo organized a press conference for Mr. LaRouche, where the entire Mexican press came. And he wanted it to, even though Portillo was not at the press conference, he wanted it to be known that LaRouche had visited there. And this was what occurred right after Mexico was forced to devaluate their currency by around 30%. They were also faced with massive capital flight from Mexico right along the border. They have a long border with the United States, where rich Mexicans were taking their money out of the Mexican banks and investing it in real estate in Texas. And it was just totally looting the economy. López Portillo felt that he had to act. And I should also note that as a result of the meeting that Mr. LaRouche had with López Portillo, circles around Portillo asked LaRouche to make a written proposal about what his nation and other nations should do, which he did do, which was called Operation Juarez, after the Mexican national figure Benito Juarez. In September, in order to deal with the flight capital, Portillo felt that the only way to control this was to nationalize the banks. He did that, and then in October, he went to the General Assembly of the United Nations, and we have an excerpt from his speech, and you have the text of this excerpt in your package in case there's a problem hearing what he has to say. You have it there.
Yeah. One of the most historic was his October 1982 address to the United Nations General Assembly, where he issued a clarion call for a new world economic order.
But the most constant concern and activity of Mexico in the international arena is the transition to a new economic order. We developing countries do not want to be subjugated. We cannot paralyze our economy or plunge our people into greater misery in order to pay a debt on which servicing triples without our participation or responsibility and with terms that are imposed on us. We countries of the South are about to run out of playing chips. And were we not able to stay in the game, it would end in defeat for everyone. I want to be emphatic. We countries of the South have not sinned against the world economy. Our efforts to grow in order to conquer hunger, disease, ignorance, and dependency have not caused the international crisis. After major corrective efforts in economic affairs, my government decided to attack the evil at its root and to extirpate it once and for all. There was obviously an inconsistency between internal development policies and an erratic and restrictive international financial structure. A reasonable growth policy was irreconcilable with freedom of speculation and foreign exchange. That is why we established exchange control. In our 3,000-kilometer border with the United States, exchange control can only function through a banking system that follows the policies of its country and government, and not its own speculative interests or the fluctuations of international financial chaos. That is why we nationalized the bank. We have been a living example of what occurs when that enormous, volatile, and speculative mass of capital goes all over the world in search of high interest rates, tax havens, and supposed political and exchange stability. It destabilizes an entire country and leaves destruction in its wake. The world should be able to control this. It is inconceivable that we cannot find a formula that, without limiting necessary movement and flows, would permit regulation of a phenomenon that damages everyone. It is imperative that the new international economic order establish a link between refinancing the development of countries that suffer capital flight and the capital that has fled. At least they should have been crumbs from their own bread. The reduction of available credit for developing countries has serious implications, not only for the countries themselves, but also for production and employment in the industrial countries. Let us not continue in this vicious circle. It will be the beginning of a new and evil dark age without the possibility of a renaissance. We cannot fail. There is good reason to be alarmist. Not only the heritage of our civilization is at stake, but also the very survival of our children, of future generations, and of the human species. Let us make what is reasonable possible. Let us recall the tragic conditions in which we created this organization and the hopes that were placed in it. The place is here, and the time is now.
It was the same José López Portillo, 16 years later, and now the elder statesman, who responded to the LaRouche message in the following way.
Yo felicito a Doña Helga por estas palabras.
I congratulate Doña Helga for these words. Which impressed me especially, because first, they trapped me in the Apocalypse, but then she showed me the staircase by which we can get to a promised land. Many thanks, Doña Helga.
Doña
Helga. And here, I wish to congratulate her husband, Mr. LaRouche. And it is now necessary for the world to listen to the wise words of Lyndon LaRouche. Now, it is through the voice of his wife that we have had the privilege of hearing. How important is it that they enlighten us as to what is happening in the world, as to what will happen, and as to what can be corrected. How important
is
it that someone dedicates their time, their generosity, and their enthusiasm to that endeavor. For my part, I fulfilled a period of responsibility. And I can report in a somewhat dramatic way what happens to national economies in an international financial order such as that which has ordered our affairs in Brazil.
At that time, LaRouche's idea was to form a debtors' cartel. A cartel, you know, you know about the oil cartel. He said, form a debtors' cartel of countries who owe this money. Then, you know, that represents a certain amount of political power, and you can demand if you work together, you can demand a restructuring of the debt. The problem was that the other countries, including at that time Argentina and Brazil, decided not to back up the president, and they were basically, the international banks bought them off with separate deals, which ended up to be the same IMF conditionalities. So we're going to jump. I'll leave the question of what happened in the Berlin, when the Berlin Wall fell, to Tom, and we're going to jump to 1997. This is when Mrs. LaRouche put out the international call for signers to sign Mr. LaRouche's proposal for a new Bretton Woods agreement. Then the next year, after, you remember 1997, the Asian monetary crisis, 1998, the Russian default on the state bonds. President Clinton came out at a speech calling for a new financial architecture. Just after that, the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal hit. But this was where he was going into. When Tom was speaking before about that we felt that Hillary Clinton would be much more qualified. It is in part because of the expression of Bill Clinton for this new financial architecture and the fact that the Clintons have been listening, if not acting on everything Mr. LaRouche is saying, at least have an open ear. Then I would just end this part by saying that here in Denmark, we have taken this, we took this campaign for the new Bretton Woods out in the election campaign, here in the communal election, when the bubble burst, new Bretton Woods, and in the recent parliamentary election where Tom and others were candidates, after the financial crash magnet train over the Kattegat. We have been running open political campaigns for this, and and we have been testifying in the Danish Parliament about these issues, including in January of this year, specifically about the international financial crisis in front of the Political Economic Committee. So, in conclusion, we have had a setback in the United States in the fact that we cannot say at this moment that we have presidential candidates who would be qualified to implement this type of program. Many things can happen between now and the elections. There's a possibility of other candidates coming forward as the economic crisis hits. But what it means is that it is up to courageous leaders of all nations to come forward, to take the chance on September 26th and come out and call for a just new world economic order. Because your people's lives and the lives of the future generations are dependent on that. They are dependent on people who, I can use the example of General Washington during the Revolutionary War in 1776, when they had basically lost every battle except for the first one. They had lost battle after battle. And George Washington stood addressing the soldiers whose commission had would expire just in a few days. It was in the middle of winter. And he said, "Who of you will stay with me?" The drums rolled, and no one stepped forward. And he turned on his horse, and George Washington, he was not eloquent, he was not an intellectual, but he was committed to the cause of liberty for his nation. He knew what the stakes were, and he, one quality that is very important in a political leader, he refused to give up. And he said to the men, he said, "You have done everything I have asked you to do. No one could ask for more. But on the other hand, we know not how to spare you." He said that your country is at stake, everything you hold dear, that you have now the chance to render to the cause of liberty, a chance that you may never have in the rest of your life. Stay with us. And then one after one, they did come forward. And in our organization, we have powerful ideas, but we do not have positions of political power. You, as appointed representatives of your nations and the nations who are elected, please take this opportunity, and as López Portillo said, the place is here, the time is now. Questions?
Yes, in no way. First of all, you should let me thank you for your lecture.